greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on business principles when we come back. In 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Now, that clause follows closely the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. But private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. Public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper are things like stocks and bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, debt and usury. Well, back in 1965, Congress said that there's no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and clad coin or currency. And you know that's true when you're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of that gold over paper. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes due on that paper over gold. Now, God and our founding fathers didn't give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. Our founding fathers knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and our politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. Those politicians in our Congress knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that if they were going to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away the people's gold and silver coin so that they could take away the people's right to property and destroy their property rights. So if you and I intend to regain our property rights, our duties, our capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights. And that's because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me teach you how to do just that. That's in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult home school. Now, if you'd like more information about our private business school, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. Doesn't cost anything. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Now remember, it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free, and you can call and order one right now. That number is 417-273-4967. Now our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Business principles. You know, over the years, I've had an opportunity to do business with, or to have contact with, literally thousands of different businessmen in all walks of life, selling everything that you can imagine, you know, used cars, new cars, houses, real estate, farms, encyclopedias and law books, and selling ideas and political concepts and religious ideas and one thing and another. And some of these people are more successful than others. You know, Billy Graham is more successful at selling religion than most other theologians, of which there's about 330,000 preachers in the country. Last time I checked, 330,000, that's a bunch of preachers, but there's only a handful of them at the very top. You know, guys like Jim Baker and Jerry Falwell and Billy Graham, Oral Roberts, and, you know, Shuler and a few of these other guys. And so, You know, if you take a look at the computer world, you know, there's a few top dogs, you know, up at the top over here. You take a look at business and finance, you know, there's a Warren Buffett up here and a few others. You take a look at media moguls and so on, you know, there's a few that are at the top, you know, like William Randolph Hearst was a great businessman as he applied his talents to the media or to the newspaper world. What is it that separates these people from all the rest of us? That's the question. You walk into a Walmart store. After you get through shopping at Walmart, then walk over to Circle K or Kmart or Target or somebody else and go in and do the same thing. When you come out, ask yourself, which of these two stores would I rather shop at? It's a simple test. It's just go over to your competitors over here and then ask yourself, well, which shopping experience did I like better? Where did I get the better prices and the better deals? Who dealt with me more fairly? Or who was it that gave me a little extra? Or who did I enjoy being with more? People complain about Walmart. Yet when you walk into a Walmart store, here's my personal experience, not that I'm pushing Walmart per se, but I walk into a Walmart store and there's a guy standing at the door, says, "Welcome to Walmart." And he pushes a cart over in front of me and he says, "Here's a cart for you. If you have any questions, just ask anybody in a blue shirt." So you're walking around in the Walmart store, I'm kind of dumb, you know, and so there's thousands of different things over here, and I want something. I've got a clue as to where this is, and this is 2 acres of space over here. Do I have to walk over 2 acres of space? Look at 30,000 different products over here to find a quart of oil. So I ask some guy in a blue shirt, I say, "Hey, I need some oil. Where do I go?" He says, "Automotive. Straight down here and turn to your left, back over in that corner." So you go back over there, and sure enough, there it is. Now, you can't find the oil, and so there's another guy in a blue shirt, and says, "I'm looking for oil. Right this way, sir." And he takes you over to the oil so that you can see. Is there anything that you don't see here that I maybe can help you with? "No, I'm just looking for some 30-weight motor oil." And he points out, "Well, it's right there in front of you." So. Now, you walk into a Kmart store, which I've done a time or two, and you walk in the door, there's nobody to greet you. They don't tell you to, you know, "Welcome to Kmart," or "Go to hell," or we're sorry that you showed up," or anything else. Nobody says a word. So you walk in, you find your cart, and you start looking around in the store. You're supposed to know where everything in this Kmart store is. Now, walk around in here and try to find somebody. You walk around in the store and you're trying to find, you haven't got a clue as to where the motor oil is. Maybe they don't even carry motor oil. I don't know. I mean, you're going to look long and hard in a Kmart store to find anybody who can tell you where the motor oil is. At least that's been my experience here in Springfield, Missouri. So I just compare the two together, and then I see that Walmart stores are expanding and building new stores, and I see the Kmart stores are contracting and selling off and closing their stores. And then I read in the newspaper over here that Kmart is laying off 17,000 people and closing 164 stores, and I say to myself, I wonder if there's a cause and effect relationship between the way Kmart conducts their business and the way Walmart conducts their business. Has anybody ever thought that there might be some principles of business that Walmart is following that Kmart isn't, and that Kmart could be more successful or could compete more effectively with Walmart if they were to copy or to foster the Walmart business principles or the Walmart business plan? I don't know. Let's explore it together and let's see if there are some business principles. Because in my experience, I'm getting kind of old now, but in my experience, I've noticed that some people are more successful than others. And so, as a young man, I looked at these more successful people and I asked myself, well, why is it that Frank Roach is more successful than Herman Slate? Both of them are in the same business. Both of them do the same things. Both of them are about the same age. One of them has more money, more cows, more land. One of them has less land, fewer cows, doesn't produce as much milk, doesn't make as much money. Why? What's the difference? And so I applied myself to that question, and I discovered that there are 101 business principles. There's 101 things that people do in their everyday business transactions that other people either don't do or don't do as well. Yeah, it's true. The Kmart store has a location. It's probably a pretty good location. There's an old adage in real estate that says location, location, location. Okay, well, assuming that we have a reasonable location, and I think most of the Kmart stores are reasonably located, just like the Walmart stores. But the Walmart stores are doing more business, have more customers, make more profit, open more stores, close fewer stores than do the Kmart people. And I wonder, is there something over there at Kmart that those Kmart people could learn from the Walmart people? Now, I know you're going to sit there and say, well, what did you expect, Gordon? The Kmart people are going to go over to Walmart and say, hey, listen, send us through your business school. No, but I'll tell you, I used to be in the business world, and I was constantly going over to my competitors to learn what they were doing. I would go out and buy their products, take them into my factory, take their products all apart, analyze every piece of it to see what their quality was all about. I got their brochures and their papers. I went into their stores and listened to their sales pitches. I was over there like a guerrilla capitalist, learning everything I could about my competitors, all their good points. I copied him just like a gorilla, you know. He goes up and he hits some guy over the head with a rock, and then he takes his gun and his ammunition. Now he's armed. That's a guerrilla fighter. See, Americans, they pay taxes and they build factories to make guns, and gorillas just hit those guys that have the guns over the head with a rock when they're not looking and take their guns. They don't have any factories. They're not making any guns. They're not paying any taxes. Now the gorilla guy, he's got a gun, and the American guy, he's got a gun. Both of them are equal now. And the American paid for both of them. So that's what guerrilla capitalism is all about. So the business principles, I wrote them all down. As time went by, I started writing these principles down, and I've been teaching them in my business class. Now, I'm not a Warren Buffett, and I'm not a Bill Gates or a Donald Trump. And I probably never will be. Those people are better businessmen than I am. But that doesn't mean that I'm not good. I'm pretty good. I'm just not top notch. But I'm getting by all right. But I have a lot of students that come through school and they're not getting by. They're not doing well at all. And so let me share with you some of these business principles, and let me show you that there's a business school here that I conduct at the law school, in which we deal with the Ten Commandments and the business principles of the Bible. That's right. There are certain things, like thou shalt not steal is a very important business principle. Because if you steal from your customers get ticked off at you. They don't come back and buy from you again. And there's a little thing here about repeat business that's very important. So let's start off with the first business principle is that in the beginning of a business is the offer. And that's why when you're out doing your shopping, you're driving down the street or you're walking down through the mall or something like that, and there's signs on the window that says sale, sale, or they've got a special. Or you go into the restaurant and you sit down and they say, well, the lunch special today is, and then they tell you what this lunch special is. Well, that's an offer. They're offering you this lunch special. They're offering you this sale. They're offering you this car. They're offering you this house. You know, that's what the advertisements on Katie Couric's 6 o'clock news are all about. You know, the CBS Evening News. They're trying to get you to buy Vioxx or Tambacol or something else to kill yourself with. And so in order to do that, they make what's known as the offer. So you have to have this offer, otherwise there's no way to do business. So a lot of times people don't know how to make the offer. How do you make your offer? You know, everybody is a salesman. Even if you're working at McDonald's flipping burgers, you're a salesman. You had to go into the McDonald's place and sell yourself, sell your body, sell your labor to the owner of the McDonald's store. He was in the market to buy labor. And you were in the market to sell yours. So you're selling him 8 hours a day for $5 an hour or six or whatever you're getting paid. You're a salesman. And you made your sale. You've got a job. If you're unemployed, you failed to make your sale. Maybe if we could show you how to make the offer, and you make the offer by going into the business establishment and filling out an application. Now, all business is transacted by unequals. Unequals. If two people are equal, they cannot do business. If two people are unequal, there's a possibility that we can do business. Here's why. I walk into the Walmart store and I look on the shelf and I see they've got 36 battery chargers. And I say, wow, look at that. Walmart has 36 battery chargers. And I ask myself, how many battery chargers do I have? And the answer is, I have one battery charger. Can Walmart sell me a battery charger? No. We're both equal. I have a battery charger, and they have 36 battery chargers, and Walmart and George Gordon are equal. I don't need a battery charger. I've already got one. I don't need 36. Neither does Walmart, and they don't want 36. They just want to sell them. So their only interest in battery chargers isn't in charging batteries. Their only interest is in selling battery chargers to people who have batteries that need charging. I have batteries that need charging, and I have a battery charger, and Walmart cannot sell me a battery charger because we're equal. They've got battery chargers, I got battery chargers. Now, one day, I go to plug in my battery charger, and I discover that it doesn't work. It's broken. Now, am I equal with Walmart? No, sir. Walmart's got 36 battery chargers, and I don't have any. I've got no battery chargers. Now we're unequal. I need a battery charger. Doesn't mean I'm going to buy it from Walmart, but it means that Walmart now has an opportunity to sell me a battery charger because now I have a need for one. So all business is transacted by unequals. Now, if the offer is a good offer, take it as is. And the reason for that is, if a guy makes you a good offer and you try dickering with him, you offend him. And then he's liable to withdraw the offer and say, forget it. Well, now you missed the opportunity to make a good buy. Because you were greedy and you wanted to make more than a good buy, you wanted to make a spectacular buy. You wanted to take advantage of the guy. This happens a lot of time. Now, there are times when you may want to take advantage of somebody. Let's suppose that a guy comes to you and he says, well, I've got this piece of property over here, and you take a look at the piece of property and you say to yourself, well, I don't want it. And the guy offers it to you and he says, well, I'll give it to you, though, for $1,500 an acre. Now, you know this ground's worth $3,000 an acre, but, he's offering it to you for $1,500. So you say to the guy, well, I'll give you $1,000 an acre. And the guy says, you know, I'm making this guy a terrific offer at half price, and the guy wants to jew me down to a third. And so that's the problem that you run into, you know, when you get greedy. I mean, you don't want the property, but, you know, if you've got the money, let's try it this way. Let's say, okay, I'll give you the $1,500, and let me give you $5,000 down. And let me sign a contract for deed with no interest for 15 years with you, and I'll take a contract for deed. Well, that gives you $5,000 down, which is called a leveraged buyout. You're going to make this guy's payment. You're going to buy this piece of ground over 15 years. There's no interest involved. So as the depreciating dollar marches on, you're going to be paying him less and less. So you'll probably get it for the one-third anyway because, you know, you're going to be paying this guy off in cheaper dollars. And your only interest in this property is to buy it today, lock it in so that you can turn around and sell it tomorrow. Maybe you're going to have it for 6 months or a year before you get it sold. That's called a leveraged buyout. So my experience has been if the offer is a good offer, take it as is. Number four, never just refuse an offer, but make a counteroffer if you don't like the offer. You know, if a guy offers you the ground over here for $1,500 an acre, and you say to yourself, I don't think that's a good offer because the land is probably worth $1,500 an acre, and you really don't want this particular piece of ground. I mean, you know, if it was sitting right next door to you, you know, if it was Steve Smith's place over here and he made me an offer like that, I might say, well, God, I'd like to have that Smith place because he's right next door to me. But maybe this guy's down the road a mile, say, or 2 miles or something like that, and it's really not contiguous to your farm, and so, you know, it's a real pain in the hiney over here to load cows up, you know, and haul them down here to the other place and haul cows around all the time. So maybe to you it's not worth that much. Maybe worth a little bit more to Don Uchman or to Jerry Minter or somebody. But, you know, the guy's made you an offer. And if you refuse his offer, he probably will never come back and make another offer to you again. And that's because he's been slighted. He made you an offer. And then you rejected him. Now, rejection is an emotion. And as a salesman, you have to get used to rejection. This is why most people are introverts and only 5% of people are extroverts. And I think the basic cause of it is rejection. It's the inability to accept rejection. You know, I make offers all the time. People reject me. I say, well, would you like to do this or would you like to do that? I made you an offer here. I said, why don't you send for my free general law CD package? That's my offer. It's a business transaction. Doesn't cost you anything. I made you the offer, and you can accept it or you can reject it. So if a guy says to me right to my face, I wouldn't take your crummy CD offer if you gave me two of them and paid me to take them. Well, it's not very likely that I'm going to come back and make that guy another offer. And that's because he's embarrassed me. He has slighted me. He's been rude to me. And it doesn't feel good. And because it doesn't feel good, you don't want to go back and get hurt emotionally again. So you just shut up. You don't tell him. I had a guy sitting at my table one day, you know, and I'm an old man, and there's a young kid, you know. I say kid, I've got a boy, you know, that's older than this kid. And, you know, so when you're 30 years old or 40 years old, you know, you're a kid to me. And so I told this young man what I thought about something over here, and he really got right in my face. I mean, he just jumped right into my face, you know, as they say, he jumped right in and splashed in four directions. And so that was an unpleasant experience. And so when he did that, I just made a little mental note over here. I said, well, I guess I don't need to tell that guy. He's probably smarter than I am. And so I don't talk to this guy very much. And when I do, I never offer him anything. I mean, I wouldn't tell this guy that the sky is up or that there's a fire sale down the street over here and they're selling gold coin at half price. I wouldn't tell him. And that's because he's rude to me. So you want to tuck that one away in your heart. Never just refuse an offer. Make a counter offer if you don't like the offer to start with. So what I do is I come back and say, well, that's a pretty good offer, Bob. And I'm just not in the market for any more ground. You know, I got more ground than I know what to do with. I got more cows than I can handle right now or whatever it is. But if you can't find a buyer, and I'll keep this in mind and I'll spread the word around, Bob, that you've got this 40 for sale or you got these 10 heifers for sale or whatever it is that you're peddling over here. So you make a counteroffer and you say, well, let me spread that around. Let me see if I can help you sell those heifers. Let me see if I can help you sell this piece of ground. Or you might make a counteroffer that says something on the order of, well, I might buy that piece of ground from you, but I don't have the cash money that you need right now. But I might take it on a contract for deed if you could butter it up, you know, and make it slide into my program pretty well. I might do that. And so then the guy's liable to come back and say, well, what have you got in mind, George? And then you could come back and say, well, I think that $1,500 an acre might be a little high for me. I think maybe $1,000 an acre might be a little better, and contract for deed, and then you make this guy, you know, the offer. And now, you haven't slighted him. Now, the reason that that's so important is because that this guy is probably going to have things to sell next week, next month, next year, and 5 years from now. Now, remember the guy that got in my face at the breakfast table? I won't make him any more offers. And, you know, business is predicated upon repeat business. You know, just because you sell a guy something today doesn't mean that, well, I've sold him something already and I'll never sell him again. You know, Coca-Cola depends upon repeat business. You bought a Coke today, we hope you'll buy a Coke tomorrow, and we hope you'll buy a six-pack the week after. So Coca-Cola wants repeat business, and so do you, and so do I, so does everybody. You know, just because you buy one school doesn't mean I shouldn't sell you a second, third, or fourth, or fifth school. And a happy, satisfied customer is a guy that comes back again. And so it's important that you not slight people, because about 95% of us are introverts and very, very sensitive to the emotional rejection that comes from somebody that says, no, I'm not interested. You know, that's kind of an insult. Now, there's 5% of us that, you know, that we run around like we've got skin with a leather, like a leather coat, you know. It doesn't have any feelings whatsoever. And you can't embarrass them, and you can't, those are called salesmen. Those are extroverts. And you can't drive them away with a switch or a club. Then they just keep coming back and coming back and coming back. Well, politicians are like that. I mean, they want you to vote for him, but if you don't vote for him, you know, he's still got a smile on his face, and he goes out. And in spite of all of the rejection that goes on, Hillary Clinton just keeps slugging along and plodding along, and she just keeps going out and telling her story over and over and over again. You know, she's an extrovert. She's a salesperson. She's an extrovert, and so there's people like that. But most of us aren't like that. So remember that when somebody makes you an offer, that they had to work up the courage to come and make that offer to you, because they're introverted to start with. So when that offer comes, don't slight them. Now, number five, all business is transacted with an acceptance. Now, that's the basis of a contract. There's four elements to a contract. It's an offer with an acceptance, over time with consideration. There are four elements to a contract. Four elements to a contract. So somebody makes you an offer, and then you make an acceptance. That's the second step in the business transaction. Yes, I will accept it. Now, you don't want to accept it until you've got an understanding as to what the terms and conditions are. That means we got to write this down, we got to work this over. So another little factor that I've noticed over time is never make a commitment until you have analyzed the problem. Never make a commitment. A guy comes up and makes you an offer, and it's a complex offer. You know, it's $1,500 an acre. Before you say yes or no, tell the guy, let me think that over, and I'll give you an answer on Thursday. Let me mull that over. Let me talk to the wife about that. Guy came in here the other day, and he said he had a piece of ground over here that he wanted to transact some business on, and so I said, well, let me ask you this. How much do you want for it? And he told me how much he wanted. And I said, how do you want to get paid for that? And he told me how he wanted to get paid. And then I went through four or five things, and so I wrote it down. I mean, I got a pad out, and I wrote down exactly what it was that he said and the date and one thing and another. And I sat down with my calculator here, and I went through the numbers. And I discovered that the numbers are screwy. And that this guy is actually asking, when we get down on the bottom line, he's actually asking $326 an acre more than the ground is worth. Now, I don't want to embarrass this guy and make him mad or anything like that, but I need to point out to him that, well, now, I got your numbers here the other day, Tom, and here's what these numbers work out to be. and this is $326, and because of this and that and another thing over here, it's a little bit above the market price. And on top of that, real estate is declining in value, and we don't know where the bottom is going to be. You know, today the ground's worth $1,500, you want $1,800, and we don't know where the bottom is going to be at $1,000. So, you know, if we're going to make this transaction today, we have to make these considerations. So you point out to the other guy that from your point of view that there's some other considerations over here. Don't be quick to speak. Be slow to speak, slow to answer. Make sure that you've got all the facts before you speak. Hey, it's halfway time here, and I got to give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. And that can be accessed to the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. And we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about business principles. Remember, you want to get the facts before you make a commitment. And that goes with with these business principles that deal with in the beginning of all businesses, the offer. All businesses transacted by unequals. If the offer is a good offer, take it as is. And never just refuse an offer. Make a counter offer if you don't like the offer. And all businesses transacted with an acceptance. So you have four elements now to a business transaction or a contract, which is an offer with an acceptance over time. There's a time element. And consideration. Now, the consideration on a contract doesn't have to be in money. It doesn't have to be expressed in dollars. It has to be expressed in specific performance. Specific performance. That is, I agree to do A if you'll agree to do B. I will mow your lawn if you will rototill my garden. Now, number six, never accept a deal that you can't perform your end of. Oftentimes, people get excited about deals, and they will make commitments, rash commitments, that they're unable to perform on. And this is why insurance companies come into the game. As a contractor, sometimes I have to put up a performance bond. Now, why do you have to put up a performance bond? Well, it's because a man's word is his bond. A man's word is his bond. Now, when I was a kid, It used to be that when somebody said something that they would perform on. Now, today that's not necessarily true. Today we have to have a contract. We have to have somebody that makes an agreement, and then we have to write it up, take it to a lawyer, and have this lawyer write it up, and then sign it and seal it, and then notarize it. And we get all through with it over here because we don't really believe that this guy can perform, so then we want him to buy an insurance policy in case he doesn't complete the job. Now, in Numbers chapter 30, there's a little story in there that deals with when you open your mouth and you make a commitment, then see to it that you fulfill it. And that's where the concept of a man's word is his bond comes from. I can remember old Frank Roche. Old Frank, you know, he'd make a deal with somebody, and he couldn't write anyway. He couldn't read. And so he would say, okay, Elias, I'll be over to your place on Monday morning, 10 o'clock, after we finish the barn work, and I'll be there with a tractor and two wagons to help you haul hay. Now, it didn't make any difference if it was on Wednesday or Thursday this deal's made. You could count on, you knew that Monday morning after barn work, that Frank Rocha would be over in your barnyard, in front of your barn with a wagon, two wagons and a tractor, and three or four men to help you haul hay. And that's because he said he would. He did not need a notarized contract written up by a lawyer and filed with the county recorder. Frank's word was his bond. All right, so it's very simple. You never accept a deal that you can't perform your end of. And so when I was a contractor, you know, I had to think about, am I big enough? Can I handle that job? You know, maybe you need a concrete pump, you know, a pumper truck here to pump the concrete into somebody's backyard when you're pouring a patio. Have you got the ability to get a concrete pumper out here, you know? Can you put the deal together so that you can get the concrete company to deliver a load of concrete, and can you get the pumper company there at the same time on the same date, you know, to make the transaction? Because what happens if you screw up and you can't get the pumper truck, but you got the concrete truck sitting out in front of this job over here with 8 yards of cement over here spinning around in 30 minutes to unload it, and the concrete pumper isn't there? Now what are you going to do? Are you gonna push all this 8 yards uphill with one wheelbarrow into a backyard? I mean, you have to be pretty practical. And it doesn't take a lot of brains to figure out over here that you don't want to accept deals that you can't perform your end of. Number 7, the best business is repeat business. The best business is repeat. It doesn't cost you anything to sell it. And that's why repeat business is so important to you. I know that when a student leaves my school, if he's happy and satisfied with the product, the service, the information that he received, he will be back. Doesn't cost me anything to sell that one again. He's already a sold customer. I also know that this guy, if he's unhappy, he not only won't be back, but he's also got 10 friends. And these 10 friends over here, when you buy a big ticket item like a car, you know, when you go into a car dealer and you buy $5,000 car or something like that, you know, you're going to tell your 10 friends. And if this car is a lemon, you're going to tell your 10 friends, this car is a lemon, I'd never buy another car from that dealer again. And of course, those 10 friends are all sitting there saying, wow, old George, he bought a car over here and he got a raw deal from Amex or whatever, and so he won't go back there again. So that sends a bad signal to your 10 friends who are not going to go to Amex to buy their new Ford. Not that Amex is a bad place now, just Amex is our Ford dealer, here he was. And so the bottom line is then that that your friends are very important to the business health of the community. And if you're one of the businessmen in the community and you stiff somebody over here, he's going to tell his 10 friends and it's going to cost you a sale to those 10 people. And those 10 people all have 10 friends. And then those 100 people all have 10 friends. And you know, pretty soon you develop such a bad name in the community that you have to go out of business and then reopen your business under a different name. This is why companies or people are constantly going out of business and then reopening or constantly changing businesses. That's because they don't perform well with the products, the goods, and the services that they're selling. And they develop a bad reputation, and then pretty soon people don't buy from them anymore. And so then the guy can't make a living, and so then he has to go out of business, and then he has to move to a new city or a new town, open a new business, and it takes 36 months to open a new business and get that thing cranking. You know, I'm getting kind of old now, but I've opened and operated a number of businesses, probably 10 or 15 over the years. And I know about how long it takes. Now, I can start a business at 5 o'clock on any day of the year. And that doesn't mean that tomorrow morning I'm going to have all these customers and do all these great and wonderful things. I know that it's going to take me some time to develop customers, a customer base, and to demonstrate to my customers that I can perform, that I can deliver what I say I can deliver. And then I'm very careful that I don't over-advertise or that I don't over-commit and say, I'm going to deliver you 6 and then only deliver 5. You're better off to tell your customer you're going to deliver 5 and then deliver 6. Because now you have understated your capacity and you have overperformed. And so an old business associate of mine told me that one time. He said, you know, you always want to understate your capacity and then over-deliver. And your customer is always dumbfounded. You tell him that you're going to finish the job next Friday, and then you finish the job on Wednesday or Thursday. And then the guy says, wow, you know, you said you were going to finish on Friday and you're done on Wednesday. That's terrific. Not a guy in here the other day, he had a unique business formula. He's a contractor. And he goes out and he bids the job in. He says, well, this job's going to be $175,000. $175,000, and we're going to do this job in 26 days. And if we can bring this job in at $160,000, then you'll save $15,000. And then I will give you that $15,000. That's quite an incentive. So he says to the customer, well, my estimate is $175,000. And, you know, I've got to bid in $175,000. Now, he looks at this job. He says to himself, it's really a $160,000 job. But if I bid $160,000 and I'm a little short and I come up $165,000 or $170,000, I've got to take it in the short. So he tells the guy it's going to be $175,000. And if I'm able to bring it in at $160,000, I'll knock $15,000 off. If it's $170,000, well, I'll knock off $10,000. If it's $165,000 or whatever, I'll knock off. And so I looked at that and I said, that's a good thinking on his part. Things generally cost more than you expect, you know, especially when you're dealing with inflation like we are today. I mean, you know, you go down to the building materials store and you get the prices on it, but you know, 30, 60 days from now, when you actually call them up and take delivery on that plywood, it'll be a dollar or two a sheet more than it is today. You know, it's kind of nickel and dime you to death, and then by the time you get through with the job, you know, you got another $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 in it that you weren't expecting, and so make sure that you got plenty in it. So, the best business is repeat business, and people repeat their business with people that they have good experiences with. And if you perform on time or before, you know. So, you know, instead of trying to tell this guy, I'll be done by Wednesday, and then it takes you till Friday to finish, why not tell the guy, I think I'll be finished by Friday? Then the guy, maybe he's disappointed. He says, God, I really wanted you to be done on Wednesday. Well, if I can finish on Wednesday, I will, but, you know, I'm not going to guarantee Wednesday, but I can guarantee Friday. Okay, well, do it by Friday. And then you finish up on Wednesday. Now the guy is just tickled to death. You're better than you advertised yourself to be. Now, number 8, you never lost any money on any deal you didn't make. I don't know how many times I've run across people over here. I used to do this. I used to go out and bid in every deal that I could buy. I mean, I was out here just bidding and bidding and bidding. And I'd lose some money on some of those deals. Now, that was when I was kind of young and foolish, kind of like those two bulls, you know, up on top of the hill. And the young bull says to the old bull, he says, look at all them heifers down there in the pasture. He says, let's run down there and breed one. And the old bull says, son, let's walk down and breed them all. And so that's kind of the way I was, kind of an eager beaver. You know, I took a look at all these jobs coming in, and I just had to go out there and bid them all in. Now, you know, as an old bull, I sit there and I say, now let's cherry pick. Let's go down there and let's just pick out one or two that really are gonna pay off, are going to pay off in a big way. And let's go after those two. And I call that cherry picking. So now, you know, when I see five deals come by, I take a look at the five of them, and I take the one deal out of the five that's really the best one. And if I got time, I might take the second best and then the third. And then let the third, fourth, or fifth go by the wayside. Let somebody else take those deals. Let them fight over the crumbs. Let us take the steak. So tuck that one away in your heart. You never lost any money on any deal you didn't make, but you've lost money on a lot of deals that you wish you had not made. And it's just caused by greed. You know, you just get overly excited about this, and I just gotta go make this deal. And then you end up losing money on it, and then you say to yourself, gee, I wish I hadn't made that deal. It wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be. Number 9, never charge interest. Interest is prohibited in Scripture. Arabs do business and they don't charge interest. And I don't know that the Arabs over there are bad businessmen. In fact, I've had some opportunity to do business with Arabs, and they're second only to the Chinese. There's nothing like a Chinese businessman. If you can do business with a Chinaman, you can do business with anybody. Now, if you think that Jews are hard to do business with, or Scotsmen or something, you're not dealing with some real businessmen. Those Chinese guys, and I'm telling you that the Chinese are business people. You think they're all coolies? Well, they might be in China, but there aren't any Chinese coolies in America or in India or South Africa. Those are the movers and shakers in the business community. In every country where the Chinese go, they are the business class. And I've never met a Chinese business boy. They're all businessmen. And they're hard to do business with. Especially if you're white. I mean, if I was a Chinese, I don't know, it might be easier to do business with them. I'll tell you a little story. I was in Oakland, California, and they got a pretty sizable Chinatown there, and I was in the building maintenance business. I was in the contracting business, but I was concentrating on repairs of apartment houses. Now, the Chinese, they don't have any craftsmen. You don't find Chinese plumbers, carpenters, or electricians. Chinese people, they don't dig ditches. They don't work in factories. They own restaurants. They own import-export businesses. They own apartment houses and real estate. Chinese are all business people. I've never seen a Chinaman that worked for wages. Not here in America. Now they probably do in China, but not here. So I happened to go out on a job one time. Some guy called me. He was a Chinese guy. He's an old man, and he had a boy. Now his boy could speak English, but the old man couldn't. or at least he wasn't advertising that he could. See, and so it was a leaky, it was a leak behind the shower faucet in the wall. It was leaking into the apartment down below. Now this is back in the days when labor was $12 an hour. So I looked at that job and I said $150. Now I know I've been fixing these leaks behind the shower wall for years. I'm just telling you that you never know how much rot there's going to be back there. And then you've got to repair the tile. You're going to repair the leak. And, you know, there's certain things that have to be done here. So I said $150. And this old man choked. So he didn't want to pay $150 to fix it. Now, as a building maintenance company, as opposed to a plumbing company, carpenter company, or a tile setter, see, when you call out a plumber, he fixes the pipe. He doesn't fix the tile. So he comes out, he knocks a hole in the wall, he fixes the leak and walks out. Now you got a hole in the wall. So now you got to call a carpenter who's gonna repair or is gonna replace the rotten wood back there. And he doesn't do tile or sheetrock work, so he's not gonna do the sheetrock. Now you gotta call a sheetrock guy. He comes out and puts the sheetrock on, but he doesn't put on tile. Now you gotta call the tile guy to come over and do this. And now you're talking about $200 or $250 to do this job. So I would come out and do the whole thing for $150. Because we did tile, sheetrock, carpentry, and plumbing. That's what a building maintenance company does. And so because we fit into that little niche business over here, you know, we're not plumbers, but we can repair the pipes, and we're not carpenters, but we can fix the wood, and we're not drywall men, but we can fix that sheetrock, and we're not real tile setters, but we can fix the tile, and we'll do that for $150. Well, this old Chinese guy, he was kind of adamant. He wanted to know, how much do you charge an hour? And, you know, I said, our shop rate's $12 an hour. And so he was haggling, and he wanted me to do it for $100. And I said no. I told his boy, we're talking through his boy, the interpreter. And I said no. I said, I don't know what I'm going to find when I open that wall up. And I said, when we leave here, the tile will be in place, and then we'll do that. Unless you just want me to knock a hole in the wall and fix the pipe, you know, and you want to do the rest of it yourself. And the old man said he didn't know how to do that, and he didn't want to do that. And so pretty soon we got down to it, and he said, well, if you work for $12 an hour, how many hours do you think it's going to take? And so I told this young boy, I said, son, he says, sometimes I can come in here and in 4 hours I can knock that out. Sometimes it takes 6 or 8 hours. Now, sometimes it may take 2 days. Sometimes I get into a job and I wished I never got involved in it. But I said, on average, it's about $150. Now, if you don't want to pay me the $150, pay us $12 an hour. And if it takes us 4 hours, you save the difference. If it takes us 8 hours, then you save the difference. And the old man mulled that over a little bit, and he said, come on out and do it by the hour. So I happened to do the job. I had 14 employees, but I was also out on the job working. So I went over there to this guy's, we had a 12-unit building, you know, in the Oakland foothills. And so I went out to this apartment house, and the old man was there, met me at the appointed time. And he sat in a chair and watched me do that whole job. Now, as it turned out, it wasn't much of a job. I knocked a little hole in the wall. I reached back in there, and it was the nipple that had rusted through into the T. So all I had there was a little hole. I put a new nipple in there, and that stopped the leak. I looked in there, and it didn't seem to be a lot of rot. Didn't seem to be any big problems back in there. So I took some Fix-All, and I stuffed it full of newspaper, and I filled it in with Fix-All, smoothed it out, and I got some tile, just white tile. And then I retiled it and grouted it. I was through in about 4 hours, and I wrote the guy up the bill, and it was $50, $60, something like that. Instead of $150, it was $50 or $60. Now, this old man, he was so impressed. He started telling all of his friends. Then his friends told their friends, I probably had more Chinese customers than any other building maintenance or plumbing company around. All the Chinese started calling me. And that's because I did this one Chinaman a good deal. And when I got in with the Chinese, you know, then all of a sudden, I didn't charge him interest. If this guy didn't pay his bill, I didn't charge that 1.5% interest every month. And I learned that I don't want to pay interest either. That's because the scripture is opposed to interest. And so my customers found out that not only don't I charge interest, I don't pay interest. And I told my suppliers, I said, no, I'm not going to sign this agreement with you to pay interest. Arabs don't pay interest. Interest grows geometrically. And if you don't abuse your credit and you pay cash, you won't have to pay that interest. So there's just a couple of little points over here, number 9 and 10. Never charge interest, and number 10, never pay interest. Number 11, do unto your customer that which you'd have your customer do unto you. That's kind of a takeoff from the biblical maxim, you know, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Listen, you got a customer there. How would you want to be treated in this transaction? Just, you know, put yourself in that guy's position over there. Would you want to be taken advantage of? Now, I know that there's an old adage that says, there's a sucker born every minute, and a fool should be relieved of his money. I mean, I've heard all of these trite comments, you know, about how to screw people over. But, you know, people aren't stupid, you know. They know they've been screwed over. I mean, when you finish the transaction, the guy is either happy or he's not. And you're the same way. You do a transaction with somebody, and you're either happy with the product, you're happy with the guy, you're happy with the deal, or you're not. And if you're not, you don't go back there again. And remember that everybody's got 10 friends. And when you slick somebody and you stiff them, the guy's going to tell his 10 friends. And that's why most of these people are business boys rather than businessmen. Now, I told you about that Chinese guy over there because that's the difference between doing under your customer what you'd want him to do unto you. And our shop rate was $12 an hour. We were paying $3 an hour wages. Now, this is back in the 60s, you know, when $3 was good wages. Minimum wage was about a buck and a half or something like that, or $1.75. So, I wasn't taking advantage of my workmen. $12 an hour was a shop rate, and the guy doesn't want to pay $12 an hour. But he sure as hell doesn't want to pay $150. And so we come to a happy medium, and he gets what he wants. I get what I want. He saves money in the process. I don't charge this guy interest. And I don't pay interest. And I pay cash. And my customer is happy. He tells his friends, and pretty soon I've got more customers, more Chinese customers than I know what to do with. I've got more than I can shake a stick at. All right, so there's our business principles up here to number 11. We'll be back tomorrow and we'll tell you some more of these business principles next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. But I'm about out of time, so let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We're going to have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.